The opinions expressed on this webmasterradio.fm program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of webmasterradio.fm. Any rebroadcast or retransmission of this program without the express written consent of webmasterradio.fm is prohibited.
Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better? It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back to the Life Tips Show, everyone. I'm here with Tal Ben-Shahar. Tal, welcome to the show.
Hi, good to be there. Thank you.
We are going to take on the topic of being happy. You're the author of a New York Times bestseller, and happy to have you on board, no pun intended.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Taking on the happiness topic has certainly got to be a pleasurable experience. Can you tell us a little bit about your background that led you into the desire to take this topic on?
Sure. So I was an undergraduate student at Harvard studying computer science, and I found myself around my second year doing well academically, doing well in sports, doing well socially, and being very unhappy. And I remember waking up one very cold Boston morning and saying to myself, I'm changing course. And the reason is because I had two questions. One is, why wasn't I happy? And two, how can I become happier? And that's when I started to study the topic and initially apply to my life and now sharing what I've learned with others.
Hmm. And that's an interesting question in itself. And by the way, you were a recognized squash champion at this time and also, I'm sure, making a radical move to get out of the illustrious computer science and moved therefore into organizational behavior in philosophy and psychology. Can you talk a little bit about that particular transition and what light went on that led you to this massive change in course of for your life?
Yeah, it was mostly that I learned that the messages that I've often received from other people, from the media, even from teachers, was that if you want to be happy, if you want to lead a full and fulfilling life, you've got to be successful. And what does successful mean? It means getting into a top college or getting a good job or getting or making more money or attaining a prestige. And a lot of these things, again, even though in a small scale that I experienced them, they didn't bring happiness. On the contrary, I felt like things were getting more and more difficult for me in terms of attaining happiness. So yeah, I was very happy when I got a good grade, but then the next time I got the good grade, you know, it didn't feel as good. And I wanted something which was more permanent, something which was which would stay with me rather than constantly feeling in that rat race and which wasn't fulfilling at all. And I looked for the source, which was, to my mind, was and still is in philosophy and psychology.
Hmm. And I'm particularly excited about that, of course, because my father just retired about a year or so ago as a professor of philosophy from the University of Maine. I'm a philosophy undergraduate major, so we can really have a field day. We might have to extend this show to 4 to 7 hours, but we probably won't do that today. But let's talk for a little bit about the roots of unhappiness, either from a philosophical perspective and or a personal, you know, perspective or of individuals. What's up with unhappiness in general? What are the roots of it, and why is it probably taking over our lives?
There are a few causes for unhappiness. One of them is a misunderstanding of what brings happiness. So people are very often chasing the wrong reward, or they are climbing up the wrong tree, in that they think that the next promotion, the next raise, the next success will make them happy, when in fact these things don't. Happiness is much more dependent on our state of mind than on our status or the state of our bank account. Mm-hmm. And while people may not hearing it, it's very difficult for most of us to truly accept that fact, that happiness depends more on our state of mind than on the externals.
Mm. Are there false senses of happiness, and how do we become conditioned for those false senses?
Yeah, so the false sense of happiness very often comes from a sense of relief. So, yeah, of course I will feel better when I get that raise, and then I mistake that for happiness. However, that feeling is ephemeral. It goes away after, you know, a week or at most a month. But when I experience it, it feels good. And then I say, okay, I want more of that. And it becomes addictive. Okay, so I want the next fix of happiness, which is not really happiness. It's just a relief from the rat race, from the pressure that I experienced before leading up to that raise or promotion or success.
I think we all probably have a sense of unhappiness. Let's now focus a little bit upon happiness itself. How do you know when you truly find happiness? What are some of the clues there?
So the first and important aspect to recognize about happiness is that happiness is not about experiencing a constant high. Paradoxically, one of the barriers to happiness is believing that to be happy, one needs to experience a constant flow of positive emotions. And then, of course, when we experience disappointment or anger or sadness or anxiety, we think, oh, there's something wrong with us because we're not happy. When in fact, these painful emotions are part and parcel of a happy life. There's no person who doesn't experience painful emotions, you know, other than the psychopath and the dead person. We all experience ups and downs. It's part of being human. And when we accept that we at times experience painful emotions, paradoxically, we open ourselves up to more happiness.
Mm-hmm. Is the contention there that you need the undulation, you need the downs to experience the highs of the ups? And this is all perhaps a perception in the state of the mind. If we just focused on the highs more than the lows, we might be happier?
You know, part of it is perception. Part of it is simply inevitable. You know, think about the law of gravity. You know, if I'd gotten up every morning and said to myself, I refuse to accept the law of gravity, you know, I've just had it with it, I would lead a life of, first of all, potentially dangerous life, but second, also a life of constant frustration. Whereas whether I like the law of gravity or not, if I accept it and live with it, you know, I can even play around with it. You know, think about the Super Bowl without the law of gravity. You know, it's meaningless, or any game for that matter, sport. Similar with painful emotions, it's a fact of nature, of human nature, just as the law of gravity is a fact of physical nature. And the sooner we accept it, the better it is for our overall well-being.
Mm-hmm. And just a quick teaser, if you would, and we'll take a break afterwards, but are there, in fact, tools or methodology that can be learned to help us achieve more happiness?
Yes. So there are actual things that we can do, that we can apply in our lives to make us happier. And these things are backed by science, by the science of happiness.
Let's take a break and come back with some tools, methodology, and ideology on how to make ourselves happier. Back in just a second, everyone.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
Hey, Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
Looking for an affiliate network that can package every solution an advertiser or publisher needs in one account? Your one-stop source for full-service solutions is AdMedia.com. AdMedia delivers an incredible lineup of specialized XML feeds for local, social, and search, plus the advertising arsenal of PPC, SEM, contextual, display, and more. AdMedia gives your campaign real visibility, from emailers to domain redirects. AdMedia tailors your all-in-one campaign to give your account a real advantage. AdMedia.com delivers cost-effective ad
Looking
solutions
for a white
with
label
real
SEO
conversions.
And social
Learn everything
for your
AdMedia
clients.
Can
Think
do for you today.
Brand.
Sign up at
Free
AdMedia.com. AdMedia, strong ROI
Premium
made simple.
Facebook apps and welcome page creators.
eBrands.
Twitter management app, analytics, and mobile site generators.
eBrands.
Let eBrands manage your search and social media campaigns and give you and your clients access to their white label dashboard, which have great reports that will wow your clients and deliver great ROI and results. Try eBrands for 30 days. Go to eBrandsWithAZ.com or call 1-866-625-5717. That's eBrands with a Z for
eBrands.
Rock the world with LinkedIn. Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the Internet Marketing Channel. Only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back. I'm here with Tal Benshar. Welcome back, Tal.
Thank you.
So you're going to fix this, Tal. You're going to make this easy to be happy. Maybe you could dive into some tools and methodology, if you will, that will highlight some of what folks can find in your book and or your teaching and lectures and speaking engagements. Give us some ideas on some tools and some methods that you think will really help us.
Great. So, you know, the first thing is maybe to accept the fact that it's not easy, that, you know, there is disappointment and unhappiness in every life. And maybe the first tool would be to accept that, to give ourselves what I've come to call the permission to be human. Mm-hmm. But once we do that, the things that we can do to raise our levels of happiness, first probably would be to be physically active. You know, it's I find it quite astounding, the kind of research coming out now of universities around the world showing how regular physical exercise, and that could be as little as 30 minutes three times a week, has the same effect on our well-being as our most powerful psychiatric medications. So not only does it benefit our bodies, it also benefits our mind. So regular physical exercise, I would say, is a prerequisite for a happier life. Then another very important aspect, and one which has been discussed a lot, is gratitude. You know, we've all got treasures of happiness inside us and all around us. The problem is that we so often take these things for granted. And when do we begin to appreciate what we have? Very often when something tragic happens, and we don't need to wait. You know, people who regularly express gratitude, whether it's around the table once a week with a family, whether it's before going to bed, whether it's with their partner, you know, once or twice a week. These people are not only happier, they're also more successful, they're physically healthier, so their immune system actually strengthens, and they're kinder, more generous toward other people. So appreciating the good in our lives actually appreciates the good, meaning we have more of it as a result.
Hmm. So those were three key factors here, and I noticed that, you know, there must be different things that different people need to do, you know, and not general things that one can aim at. For example, there are people that are perfectionists that just can't stop until they arrive at the ultimate perfect, you know, article or document. You know, do they need their own tailored sense of regrouping, and maybe they need more of one thing than something else to bring them to happiness?
Sure. So there are.
Is it customized for each individual?
Yeah. One of the ways to identify those things that can make us happier is writing a journal. Mm-hmm. So we actually know ourselves, or potentially we can know ourselves better than anyone else can. And one of the ways to get to know ourselves is by writing. There's been a lot of research done over the last 20 to 30 years about the benefits of journal writing. And of course, if we can afford, you know, to speak to a professional, whether it's a good coach or a good therapist, that is great. But even writing a journal can help us a great deal in terms of learning to know our needs. So there are particular needs, but then there are also general needs that we all have. For example, the number one predictor of well-being is the quality time we spend with people we care about and who care about us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time I spend with my best friend, or it's a meal that I have with my family. And the key when spending time with those people is to be in the experience, because today we so often spend time with those people, but we're on the phone at the same time, or checking email, or doing something else. And these distractions take us away from the experience. So in a sense, we need to disconnect from those distractions, be it the phone or email, in order to truly connect to people and to derive maximum benefit in terms of our happiness from these experiences.
Hmm. That raises an interesting question of the different funnels of things that can make us happy. Do you think other people and how we treat other people, or what we get from other people, the energy we get from other people, is a big driver for overall happiness?
For certain. Given that other people are the number one generator of well-being in the form of quality relationships, how we treat others certainly reflects back on ourselves. You know, the cliche, if you smile at the world smiles back, is actually mm-hmm. true. So there mm-hmm. are muscles in our face that respond, react empathically to the muscles in other people's faces. So if they smile, we smile back, even if it's a small smile, and that actually makes us feel better, which makes them feel better. So potentially it can be an upward spiral, or of course a downward spiral, if we initiate a negative encounter.
Interesting. And is there an actual correlation between smiling and happiness as a concept?
Yes, and it works both ways. You know, happier people smile more, and smilier people become happier.
And for people that are laughing a lot, is laughing the ult? Is it describe the chemical balance that happens with smiling and happiness and laughter, particularly, and how powerful that is in your research.
Yes, so smiling and especially laughter mm-hmm. contributes a great deal to the harmony of our body. So there are chemicals like norepinephrine, serotonin, dopamine that are the very chemicals that our psychiatric medication releases. Only mm-hmm. with laughter, it happens naturally, and mm-hmm. it's released without the negative side effects, or rather with positive side effects. You know, it makes us happier, it makes us healthier physically, and given that it's contagious, it also contributes to others' well-being.
Hmm. Would you ever imagine something called a happy clinic, where people could go to just plain learn more about being happy, and to laugh more, and to, you know, perform things as a group that would bring out happiness? Is that something like that ever possible?
Yeah, well, I think it's not only possible, I think it's necessary. You know, we go to a therapist when things go awry, but why wait for that? Why not have, you know, centers, classes, coaches, or therapists even, whose focus is simply to enhance happiness levels. And it's important for two reasons. Why? Because it feels good to feel good. It will make us feel better. It's better. But there is another reason, because happiness can also act as a buffer. In other words, it can make us more resilient and better able to handle difficult situations when these arise. So, you know, I'm thinking of schools, for example. If they can focus not just on the, you know, on the three R's, but they can focus, you know, beyond writing, beyond reading, beyond arithmetic. They also focus on life skills. And one of the most important life skills is how to generate positive emotions in ourselves and others. And when students learn to do that, or adults learn to do that, they become happier. They also gain invaluable tools for dealing with difficulties, hardships, and challenges.
We're in the content business with Life Tips, of course. We have 120,000 tips that are available. Have you studied, content and the importance of there being content being infused with humors and insights and those aha moments and how that interacts with the brain and what it does to help the story be well told?
So there's a lot of work being done in the area of psychology about analyzing content. So analyzing the content that, you know, people read, as well as analyzing the content that people produce. In terms of what people read, the words that we read affect us much more than we think. So, for example, there is a fascinating series of studies done by John Barge, who's a professor at Yale, showing that people who are what's called primed, in other words, subconsciously observe words associated with elderly. So whether it's words like cane or wrinkles, or one of the words there was Florida. When people read such words, they actually end up walking slower and more stooped as a result, and it also affects their memory, because that is a negative stereotype about the elderly. By the way, this is done in the U.S., not in Asia. It would not work there because they don't have the same stereotypes. So even the words that we read, positive words or words with negative connotations, affect us. In terms of generating words or writings, when people have aha experiences while they are writing a journal, that leads to sort of a new brain order. It leads people to very often to solve problems, to get rid of emotional, psychological knots that have existed there, and they actually feel better as a result. And sometimes you see those effects immediately, but you also see them a year later, even if they had just spent 20 minutes or 1 hour writing.
Is it important to achieve, you know, this happiness? You know, how important is writing to that? You know, you mentioned journals and, you know, documenting some of the things perhaps that make you happy, or, you know, being more thoughtful. How important is writing to that? Is writing actually possibly one of the methods that you need to find happiness?
Yes, you know, Lord Richard Layard, who's a famous economist in the UK, said that ideally he would like every person in the UK, and by extension in the US, to have a private therapist. You know, this is not realistic. Whether it's good or bad, it's obviously not realistic. It's too expensive. However, what is realistic is for each and every person, or at least most people, to keep a journal, to write about their emotions, to try and resolve issues that they are experiencing. And the two best ways of resolving issues are, one, talking about them, so, you know, talking to our best friend, to our partner about it, And the second one, equally effective, is to write about it. And again, this is something which is accessible. So I highly recommend keeping a journal. I do that. I certainly encourage my students to do that. And to write on a regular basis. So the key is to set a ritual. You know, just like I would have an appointment once a week with a coach, I would once a week sit down and write for 20 minutes, or if I want, if I feel the need, the urge, longer than 20 minutes, but at least 20 minutes.
And that fits with your contention that the self-reflection is really guided by some rules and guidance. It is really, I think, the contention of what you talk about in your book. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, the foundation of change has to be self-awareness, and that comes through reflection.
Mm-hmm. Got it. It's just been a pleasure having you on the show. Tell the guests, the listeners on the show, how they can get a hold of you and what you do. Besides being a wonderful author, give people a flavor for how people can get a hold of you and what they should get a hold of you about.
The best way would be through my website, which is talbenshahar.com. And there people can get in touch with me or take my online courses, which I'm offering on happiness, relationships, and various other topics. And I hope to hear from them, and because helping other people be happier makes me happier.
And I'm going to spell that for the listeners. It's talbenshahar.com. Fantastic website, fantastic resources. And it's really been a pleasure having you on the show.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks again for being here. Hope your life's a little smarter, better, faster, and wiser, everyone. Until next week, hope you have a great and happy week.